what you're probably thinking. Man, it's been a minute since I heard a new Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. It's been like forever. Like, how many weeks has it been? Like, God dang, man. I wish this dude would get off his behind and get behind the microphone for a change, right? Fair enough. I understand, y'all. Jay Hicks is back. Hip Hop Sports Report podcast in full effect on a Wednesday afternoon. Today would be September the 2nd. Happy September to everybody. Labor Day is just around the corner. And like most people, I'm confused at why the day off is called Labor Day. That doesn't make a ton of sense, but whatever. You know, we want to get this podcast off so you can listen to it during Labor Day weekend, or better yet, before Labor Day weekend. So, yeah, man. It's been a little bit. Apologize for that. You know, you guys probably know that I do the website, of course, hiphopsportsreport.com, and I also have the podcast here available on Stitcher Radio and on iTunes. But the podcast and the website is something I do secondarily. I actually have a 9-to-5 job, and I just got a new job recently, so I've had a lot of running around and learning and training and all this type of stuff with that, so that's kind of eaten up a portion of my time and my energy and thought process. Plus, I've been writing like a fool, y'all. Have y'all seen all the stuff we have going up on the website right now? We're in the midst of our NFL preview. NFL preview. I'm going to say it one more time. NFL preview. Yes, you need to check that out. HipHopSportsReport.com. And we're going to be predicting who we have winning each division and the conference champions from the AFC and the NFC. And, of course, our Super Bowl preseason pick. And you guys have to stay tuned to see who we have for that. Some of that's already up. As you can see, we've already had the AFC South, which I've written, had some scathing remarks about the Indianapolis Colts organization. Shame on you, Indianapolis Colts. Go ahead and check that out if you guys are curious about what I'm talking about. In addition to that, of course, the AFC West, authored by Anthony Houston. And, of course, the... What was the first one? Justin, what was the first one? The first one was the... It was the NFC West. That was the one I let off with. So the NFC West, I did that one, and the AFC South. Anthony did the NFC, or the AFC West. And now we're coming back with the NFC North probably as soon as tonight. That one's getting posted. So by the time you hear this podcast, the NFC East podcast, I'm getting all mixed up. Let me start again. The NFC East preview is going to be on the website by the time you hear this podcast. That's more than likely what's going to happen. That's going to be authored up by our guest this evening, Kenneth Hicks. He'll be on momentarily. But first, I wanted to again plug the website, as we always do here, hiphopsportsreport.com. Please follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/HHSReport. Please follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/HHSReport. We're on Google Plus, we're on iTunes and Stitcher. Please go out and like us on iTunes and Stitcher, or maybe not like, I don't think it's the like process there, but it's a rate process. Please go out and rate the podcast, provide feedback, commentary, suggestions, ideas, anything that you have is greatly appreciated. If you're not going to do that on iTunes, please shoot us a message. There's a contact area on the website where you can reach us at. You can contact us directly on Facebook or Twitter. So any way that you guys need to get a hold of me to let me know what you like and what you want to hear, I'm down for it. And so please do all that. My man Anthony, he's out here killing it with the Orange and Blueprint podcast for all you Knickerbocker heads out there. So please make sure you check that out, especially as we roll back into the basketball season later on in the fall. And but right now it's all about football, man. We got football on the brain, pigskin on the brain. So obviously the NFL preview is happening, as I just pointed out. So we're going to roll out the rest of the divisions in the coming days, and that should all be up before the start of the season next Thursday, I believe, is when the Patriots play the Steelers. And if there's any sense in that, Judge Berman, reigning Super Bowl MVP Tom Brady, should be on the field that night, but that's neither here nor there. But we're going to talk a little bit of college football tonight, because we haven't really focused a lot on college. So obviously the college football season starts tomorrow, and we'll see Michigan take on Utah, and Jim Harbaugh's return to Michigan and all that stuff, and he's going to be going up against the Utah Utes, and that should be a fun game. The second year of the playoff and all that. We'll get into all that with our guests a little bit later on. I wanted to lead off the podcast talking about hip-hop for a little bit, and I have my notes right... Got my notes right here ready. I hope you guys can appreciate my preparedness for this podcast. I don't, you know, sometimes I just ramble off the head, and actually most of the time I just ramble off the head. Let's just, like, who's kidding who? Okay, I just ramble. That's what I do. That's why I have a podcast. Podcasts are people that ramble and don't know how to keep the damn mouth shut. That's what the whole point of this is, right? So that's what I do. But it's not always just whatever's rolling around in my head at the moment. Sometimes I do prepare, and I prepared something. I actually printed off something that I'm going to read to you, tidbits of it anyways, momentarily. From the music scene, though, we know this week, Face Mob, Scarface, one of my favorite rappers, who I actually just referenced in the AFC South preview, actually, a tweet that he sent to us some time ago. So you guys can check that out in the AFC South preview. I do have a tweet from Scarface in there. But Scarface, one of my all-time favorite MCs, he's dropping an album on Friday called Deeply Rooted. Again, that's dropping September 4th. Please go check that out, because anybody that cares about hip-hop messes with Scarface. Like, if you don't like Scarface, then you probably don't like hip-hop for real, for real. Like, that's kind of the bottom line. Like, which is funny because, you know, Scarface is from Houston, Texas, but anybody that grew up in Cleveland, where I grew up, there's like a great appreciation for Scarface in Cleveland, and there's this connection on the hip-hop level between Cleveland and Houston. And I don't know how it happened or where it came from. Like, when Mike Jones first blew up back in like 03, like, every car riding up and down the block was blasting Mike Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like, Cleveland was like in on the ground floor, that whole balling on the ground, all that stuff. Like, Cleveland was in on that. And they just adopted some of that chop and screw culture from back in those days. You know, guys like Lil Flip, you know, Paul Ball, all those guys was getting play in Cleveland. So I don't know where that stems from exactly, but I do know that Scarface is basically the godfather of Southern rap. You know what I mean? And so, you know, he authored up solo albums going all the way back to the early 90s. And, of course, prior to that, he did his group thing with the Ghetto Boys. Bushwick Bill, Willie D, and all those guys made some classic songs. And so, you know, I love Scarface. And so I will absolutely be checking out Deeply Rooted, because anytime he gets behind the mic, it's something special. The guy's gifted. He's got a gifted voice. He talks about stuff that most rappers don't talk about. He talks about death. He talks about God. You know, and he talks a lot about he used to talk about a whole bunch of ratchet stuff too. He does that from time to time still, but not nearly as much as he used to, I don't think. But I just love Face Mob, man. The Fix album that came out in the early 2000s, I think 2002, was my favorite album. Probably, it's arguably my favorite album ever. It's like right up there. I love Reasonable Doubt by Jay-Z. I love Stillmatic. I love Illmatic. I mean, Ready to Die by Biggie, you know, Me Against the World, Tupac, Marshall Mathers LP. These are some of my all-time favorite albums. But The Fix is right near the top of the list because he touched on so many different things on that record. Like, you know, like I said, God and race and family and politics. And he talked to, and of course, the dope game and stuff like that. He talked about knocking cats out in the street. You know, like, it was everything that you could really want in a record. It was a complete record. So that's why I'm looking forward to Deeply Rooted, because yeah, I don't know what way Face is going to go with it, but he raps about stuff that most other cats, you know, don't have the balls to rap about a lot of times, or don't think that they can. I don't think they have that substance within them, and Scarface does. So go check that out on Friday. But before that, Rick Ross, the Boss, he's dropping an album on Thursday. So I don't really appreciate the way that he undercutted Face Mob like that, because Face ain't going to really sell a ton of records anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, you didn't have to undercut a Southern legend like that. Like, you're a Southern legend in the making yourself, Rick Ross. Like, you should respect another Southern legend and not, like, undercut him like that. And everybody knew that his album was dropping September 4th. And then all of a sudden, you just come out of nowhere like, hey, surprise, we're dropping on the day before. Like, everybody's going to forget about your album now. Not that Rick Ross owes Scarface anything, but I just didn't appreciate that. You know what I mean? But Black Dollar, Rick Ross's record, is dropping tomorrow, actually. So by the time you hear this, Black Dollar will probably be out. You know what I mean? And we here at the Preseason Podcast of the Year, we do mess with Rick Ross. Absolutely, we do. I mean, he's not my favorite rapper. He's been a subject of many things here on the podcast over the years, just because he is hilarious. He's hilarious. And I don't mean just the stuff that he says, but just the way he is, his ways, the way he moves. He's just a character. And that's the best way to describe him, as a character. And you can tell by the fact that he jacked a whole nother man's life and turned it into a rap career. That's essentially kind of what he did, sort of. So, but I have a lot of respect for Rick Ross as an artist, though. So And MMG needs a win. I think that's fair to say, because Ross put out two albums last year, Mastermind and the name of the second one now escapes me all of a sudden. But neither one of them, I don't think, had the staying power that they would have hoped, that he would have hoped for, right? And then you had Wale put out a record, the album About Nothing, this past spring. I think it got some decent traction. I mean, and Wale has his core stable of fans, but like, it just didn't really feel like MMG on the whole had moved the needle. And then Meek got out, right? And then look what happened to Meek Mill this summer. And we have an article about Meek Mill on the website hiphopsportsreport.com right now, where we're basically saying, look, the hate has gone too far with Meek Mill. But that's a kind of another thing. The point is that Meek Mill's had a horrific summer. I think most of us would tend to agree with that. So at least since he put the record out, like, he had the number one album in the country, so his summer got off to a fantastic start. And then when the whole Drake thing happened, it just went downhill very quickly. So MMG could use a win, so I hope Ross really brought it. And I did hear the Foreclosure record, so that was a hot one. It wasn't amazing, but I definitely liked it. So that's I guess the lead single off Rick Ross's new album. So that happened. And then a few days ago, Lupe Fiasco did also drop out of nowhere, like a surprise EP mixtape thing, called Fahrenheit, which I guess he has a different word. I'm pulling it up right now. It's like a different word for each, as the title of each track. So track one is called In, track two is called Valleys, track three is Of. So the whole thing is In Valleys of Kings Pyramid Schemes. So assuming that when I got it in the correct order, that's, I guess, what it's supposed to be. So, you know, you kind of have to listen to that and kind of piece together what it is. You know, Lupe, he always loves to give you a homework assignment. You know what I'm saying? Like, he really prides himself on making you Google whatever the hell it is he's talking about, and go on all the, like, Rap Genius websites to try to figure out what on earth he means and what he's trying to get at. That's just kind of what he gets off on, so. And I can't blame him for that. I mean, basically what I'm saying is he gets off on, like, knowledge and making people think. So that's not really a criticism, but it's just kind of funny to me how, like, Lupe prides himself. Like, when he dropped his last album, he was telling people on Twitter, like, get your thinking caps on, y'all. And it's just like, okay, man. Like, I mean, people like to learn, but people also like to be entertained. And I think you got to find that happy medium. When you come at it almost like it is a homework assignment, I think you're going to lose a few people along the way. But, I mean, Lupe's got his niche, and I'm definitely in it because I like learning and I like knowledge, and I'm a bit of a closet nerd myself. I know you guys can't tell, but it's true, you know? So, Lupe Fiasco, I think he's underrated lyrically, and just his impact on the rap game, I think, has been highly underrated over the course of the last decade. I don't think he gets nearly enough credit when people speak about the best in the game. And so, you know, go check out his mixtape. Let me know what you think, man. Hit us on Twitter. Hit us on Facebook. Let me know what you thought of that. The Ross Project, the Scarface Project, whatever. Hopefully Scarface has all his marbles, man. I heard some interviews was out there floating around as he's promoting this album. They're saying he don't have it all there right now. So hopefully he's healthy and he's in a good mind space as he's putting this album out. But the other guy I wanted to really touch on real quick, and you may have heard of him. His name is Kanye West. He's a frequent topic of discussion on the website. He's a frequent topic of discussion on the preseason podcast of the year. Kanye won the MTV Vanguard Award at the MTV Video Music Awards this past Sunday, which is great. It was a great accomplishment for him. They only give it to people that are, like, truly, like, legends in the eyes of, like, music culture and American pop culture, stuff like they named it after Michael Jackson, I think, but then I think they've given it to people like Madonna and probably like Cher, or, you know, Britney Spears may have won it, Timberlake may have won it. Like, these guys are, I mean, they're not necessarily all the best artists, but they are legitimate super duper stars. And those are the type of people that get this award. And so Kanye got the award. Very happy for him. And everybody was going to tune in to see what he was going to say and do. First of all, Kanye was there, you know, he was dressed like a sack of potatoes, you know what I'm saying? That's just kind of what his choice of wardrobe was for that night, which is hilarious to me because, you know, Kanye's been always going on and on and on about breaking into the fashion industry, and that's been like his one of his main focuses over the course of the last couple of years, and he's been shunned by that industry. And I believe Kanye does have a lot of flair and style, or at least he did once upon a time, but now every time I see him, he's like wearing something weird, or he's like got on like a muumuu that's like an all black, or he's got on some skin tight leather pants for no reason and he's in Los Angeles, or it's like, you know, or he's got this big khaki colored whatever it was that he had on the other night. But whatever, that's not the point. The point is Kanye got on stage and Taylor Swift presented the award to him, which was, you know, kind of like a come full circle type thing after Kanye had interrupted Taylor Swift's award receival, is that a word? When she received the award, Kanye interrupted her and said, I'm gonna let you finish, but Beyonce had the greatest video and all that. We all remember that. And Kanye was the most hated man in America for like what felt like 2 years after that. And so they were coming full circle, and Taylor and Kanye are friends. You know, that was all water under the bridge, even though a lot of people couldn't, took them a long time to get over that. Taylor Swift, I think, got over that fairly quickly. And before I forget, y'all, one quick tangent on the MTV Awards. First of all, number one, they don't really show videos on MTV anymore, so I'm not even really sure how they have the Video Music Awards anymore when they don't show music videos. Number two is a lot of people, like I saw on social media, were getting pissed off because Kendrick Lamar wasn't winning any awards. And I'm just thinking, like, why are you surprised that Kendrick Lamar is not winning awards? Like, he got awards because he was on the record with Taylor Swift. You know, he did the Bad Blood record. That's the only way he's ever going to get an MTV award, because they're not checking for Kendrick Lamar at MTV. Like, you know how MTV rolls. You know how most of these award shows roll. You know how the Grammys roll. That stuff is whack. And you know who deserves to win these awards, and then you always see who ends up winning the awards, and it's never the right person. If you follow hip-hop, you know who had the most impact on the game in 2012-13 was Kendrick Lamar, and then they give all the Grammys to Macklemore, you know what I'm saying? And Macklemore is performing at the MTV Awards with that garbage record Downtown, and he drags up some old hip-hop legends to, and props them up to kind of make it look like, you know, he really has a lot of respect for the game. And I'm not saying he doesn't have respect for the game, but that song is barely hip-hop on any level, and yet he brings out these rap legends and he kind of gives people a pass for it, you know what I'm saying? Some people defend it. I saw Big Daddy Kane, I think, defended it on Instagram or whatever. I don't really agree with all that, but the record is trash to me. But anyway, that's just you know, the kind of stuff that MTV gravitates to. That's what the Grammys gravitate to. So don't be shocked when you see guys like Kendrick Lamar not win a Grammy, or an MTV award in this case, or when you don't see J. Cole get nominated for an MTV award. Like, that should not come as any surprise. But so anyways, I digress. Getting back to the point, Kanye West gets on stage, and remember when I was shuffling my papers before? It's because I printed out the speech that he gave. Now, this speech lasted like 13 minutes. It was like between like 11 and 13 minutes, this speech. I guess maybe 12 would be between 11 and 13. And it really isn't that long of a speech. Like, when you print it out, it's not that long. And it's really funny because the only reason that the speech lasted as long as it did, because Kanye kept taking these big pauses in between and allowing the crowd to kind of indulge in, you know, he's kind of indulging in the crowd and in the moment, to the point where like the crowd just keeps yelling and screaming for him. And it's like, as long as he keeps the microphone down, they're just gonna keep yelling for you. And that's just like an old trick. That's the oldest trick in the book, right? So, you know, Kanye, he says something like, the first thing he said, bro, listen to the kids. And then that lasts for like 3 minutes, right? And then he says, first of all, thank you to Taylor Swift for being, you know, so gracious and blah, blah, blah. And then he finishes that sentence. You know, I'm at the grocery store and he's talking about fruit juice. And he says, oh, people say, oh, you're not that bad after all, having, not that I've met you. And these long pauses are in between, right? And every time he does that. And then every time he's just like, he puts his head in his hands and he's rubbing his eyes and he puts his hand on his head because he just can't believe it. Like, and he's just really just milking the moment. Like, and that's what he did the whole time. You know what I'm saying? So that's the first thing. But he thanks Taylor Swift, right? And then he moves on to talking about the moment where he interrupted Taylor Swift's shine. You know what I'm saying? He stole her shine or whatever. And what was really funny was that this is classic Kanye. Like, he second guesses himself on stage talking about, you know, now that I have a daughter, would I have done that again, like, would I have approached that the same way now that I have a daughter? You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And he never says, no, I wouldn't have done it again. Like, that's the hilarious part about it, was that he never once said, Taylor, I'm sorry, at least not in this public moment. I mean, I'm sure he's apologized to her in private, but in this public moment, he did not take the opportunity to say, Taylor, I'm sorry again, or he did not take the opportunity to say, no, I would never have done that again. He just said, would I have gone on stage and grabbed the mic from somebody else? Would I do it all again? Anyway, and he just moves on. And then he says, this arena, talking about where they shot the MTV Awards, he says, this arena tomorrow is going to be a completely different setup. The stage will be gone. After that night, the stage will be gone, but the effect that it had on people remained, talking about the Taylor Swift incident. The problem was the contradiction. I do fight for artists, but in that fight, I somehow was disrespectful to artists. I didn't know how to say the right perfect thing. So he's showing like a little bit of remorse for that decision, and I can appreciate that, because that's kind of what I was just joking about a moment ago, that he didn't really show, but he did kind of show it in that moment. And he's right that effect did kind of linger, probably a lot longer than it should have. He goes on to say that he sat at the Grammys and watched his friend Justin Timberlake lose and Gnarls Barkley lose, which again should come as no surprise to anybody, because they're just going to give it to whoever the next hot British artist is. They're going to get the Grammy for Album of the Year. You know what I'm saying? That's what they do over there. So then he says he didn't want to put Justin Timberlake on blast. And then he proceeds to put him on blast by talking about Justin was in tears because he didn't win the Grammy. Which I'm thinking, again, why is Justin Timberlake concerned about the Grammy Academy to that point? Like, the Grammys are largely a sham. They get stuff wrong all the time. And so I don't know why anybody would cry over that. But that's what he said. And then he wraps up that paragraph, and Kanye says, quote, all this shit they run about beef and that, sometimes I feel like I died for artists to be successful and have an opinion after they were successful, end quote. So again, there's Kanye making himself in to be a martyr, basically, right? You know, he sacrificed himself for other artists, which there may be a little bit of truth to. I'm not going to front on that. But again, it's kind of like, you know, allow you to point that out of all people, Kanye. And then he proceeds to say, I'm no politician, bruh. File that one away. And then he does another, listen to the kids, bruh. Does another one of those a little bit later. And then he has this one paragraph where he says, quote, I still don't understand award shows. I don't understand how they get five people who work their entire life, one, sell records, sell concert tickets, to come stand on a carpet and for the first time in their life be judged on the chopping block and have their opportunity to be considered a loser. I don't understand it, bro. I've been conflicted. I just wanted people to like me more. But fuck that, bro. 2015. I will die for the art. For what I believe in. And the art ain't always going to be polite. End quote. So, again, there's Kanye kind of patting himself on the back a little bit. Kind of, you know, self-indulgent a little bit. But at the same time, he's not completely wrong with what he said. Because he's right about us kind of judging people on art. Like, it is kind of like arbitrary, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like it's art, you know? So, I mean, we can have our opinions on it. But to actually, like, award it is a little strange when you kind of really step back and think about it. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, he does want people to like him. I think he does care about what other people think. I think we all know that. And then he goes on to say that, he said, we the millennials, bruh! We the millennials! And which I remarked on Twitter, like, dude, Kanye, you're pushing 40. Like, you're not a millennial, man. I love you. You're not a millennial. Millennials are, like, 18 to, like, 32 years old right now. 34 years old right now. Like, you are a little beyond that. You were born in, like, the mid-70s. You're a Generation Xer. That's kind of what it is. But still, I think maybe he was more so talking about the mentality of the youth and the young people that maybe drive or listen to his music. So I can, again, and this is going to get to my larger point in a moment. So then he finishes up by saying this, and this is the most important part of his speech. He said, we the millennials, bruh. This is a new mentality. We're not going to control our kids with brands. We're not going to teach low self-esteem and hate to our kids. We're going to teach our kids that they can be something. We can teach our kids that they can stand up for themselves. We're going to teach our kids to believe in themselves. If my grandfather were here right now, he would not let me back down, end quote. So again, there's Kanye talking about how he believes in his craft, he believes in his art, and I can respect that. I really can't respect that, because I think he was genuine in that moment, in that paragraph, aside the millennial part. I think he was very honest and very genuine and very accurate as far as how we should be handling the youth going forward. So I think that's commendable, because his heart's in the right place. I really do believe that. And then, of course, he ends with the thing that most everybody remembers, which is that he decided that he's running for president. But he also said, it's not about me. It's about ideas, new ideas, people with ideas, people who believe in truth. So that, and then the presidential thing ended the speech. So first of all, I think that was the first time I'd ever heard him say, it's not about me. So that was something. But people didn't want to hear that because it got buried in everything else he said. So, and then the running for president thing, I don't know if he was serious or he was joking. And I'm all for Yeezy 2020. I think that's kind of funny and whatever. But that means we got to have First Lady Kim Kardashian, and we're going to have the Kardashian family in the Oval Office. And we just cannot have that as a country. So keep that in mind, everybody, as you hashtag Yeezy 2020. But here's my point. Kanye, he's clearly fighting for his artistry, and he's always fought for art in his artistry, going all the way back to Jesus Walks and how he couldn't even get that picked up and couldn't get it played on the radio, that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, Kanye has to realize, man, like, you have to, like, refine your message, man. That's always been the problem with him. He has this wonderful idea or thought or message or belief, and it's pure and it's genuine and it's correct most of the time. But then he dunks it in this bowl of Kanye whatever, and then the message gets lost because people can't get past the arrogance, or they can't get past the self-congratulatory nature of it. Like, they can't get over him patting himself on the back constantly. If he just refined his message, I think people would really come to like Kanye a lot more. But he has to refine it on a consistent basis. Like, he just goes up there and he just wings it and speaks from the heart and people love it. Woo! You know? And it's like, okay, you may love what he had to say, but for every person that's cheering him on, there's a whole bunch of other people that were like, man, turn this dude off. I couldn't tell you how many people I saw on social media afterwards that were like, dude, what the hell was Kanye talking about? They didn't even understand what he was saying, you know, because they saw him taking these long pauses and talking about rolling a spliff or whatever and running for president, and lost on all that was all this stuff about him fighting for his art and teaching kids right from wrong and all that stuff. And so you have to filter the message, man. Like, you can't just get up there and just wing it all the time. Because when Kanye speaks from his heart, he gets in trouble. That's just kind of what it is. So hopefully, moving forward, he can learn how to refine that message a little bit. And I think people will like him more for it. And I think that's what he wants. He said that's what he wants. He wants people to like him. But they're not going to like him as long as he keeps doing the whole long pause thing. Because every time he gets on stage, he's just so overcome with emotion that he just has to, you know, hold it out and let everybody cheer for him. So, I love you, Kanye. But that speech kind of embodied everything that I love and can't stand about him. And that's kind of what it was, man. That's the MTV Awards and the Kanye speech in a nutshell.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Motherfucker named Ice Cube, from the gang called Niggas with Attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies are hauled off. You too, boy, if you fuck with me, the police are gonna have to come and get me. Off your ass, that's how I'm going out. For the punk motherfuckers that's showing out, niggas start to mumble, they wanna run.
from?
Straight out of Compton. Another crazy ass nigga. When punks I smoke, yo, my rep gets bigger. I'm a bad motherfucker and you know this. But the pussy ass niggas won't show this. But I don't give a fuck, I'ma make my snaps. If not from the records, from jacking across, it's like burglary. The definition is jacking. But when illegally armed, it's called packing. Shoot a motherfucker in a minute. I'll find a good piece of pussy and go up in it. So if you had a show in the front row, I'ma call you a bitch or a dirty ass hoe. You probably get mad like a bitch is supposed to. But that shows me slut talking post to a crazy motherfucker from the street. Attitude legit, cause I'm tearing up shit. MC Ren controls are automatic. For any dumb motherfucker, it starts static. Not a right hand, cause I'm a hand itself. Every time I pull an AK off the shelf, the security is maximum, and that's a law. R-E-N spells Ren, but I'm wrong. See, cause I'm the motherfucking villain. The definition is clear, you're the witness of a killing that's taking place without a clue. And once you're on the scope, your ass is through. Look, you might take it as a trip, but a nigga like Ren is on the gangster tip, straight out of Compton. Compton.
Easy is his name and the boys coming
straight out of Compton. It's a brother that'll smother your mother and make your sister think I love her. Dangerous motherfucker raising hell. And if I ever get caught, I make bail. See, I don't give a fuck, that's the problem. I see a motherfucking cop, I don't dodge him. But I'm smart, lay low, free for a while. And when I see the punk pass, I smile. To me it's kinda funny, the attitude show a nigga driving, but don't know where the fuck he going, just rolling, looking for the one they call Easy. But here's a flash that never sees me, ruthless. Never seen like a shadow in the dark. Except when I unload, you see a spark and jump over a hesitation, and hear the scream of the one who got the last penetration. Feel a little gust of wind and I'm jetting. Believe a memory, no one will be forgetting. So what about the bitch who got shot? Fucker, you think I give a damn about a bitch? I ain't a sucker. This is an autobiography of the E. And if you ever fuck with me, you get taken by a stupid dope brother who will smother. Word to the motherfucker.
And with that, joining me right now on the Your Ad Here hotline, right here on the preseason podcast of the year, our old friend, author of the book Natural Life, available on Amazon.com and ObelisMediaGroup.com. Go get it. Kenneth Hicks, welcome back to the podcast. How you feeling?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be here. As you know, as I say, I hate to sound repetitious, but you know, I mean it. Enjoy being here.
Yeah, man, for sure. College football, like I said before at the top of the show, we've done a lot of stuff for NFL, and we're going to continue to do a lot of stuff for NFL, but we want to take a little time out and show the kids some love. We love the kids, right? So, college football, where else, what a better place to start than the top of the crop, the cream of the crop, the cream rise to the top, whatever cliche you got about the Buckeyes on top, you know what I'm saying? The Ohio State Buckeyes. Fresh out of Columbus, straight out of a national championship. Nobody believed in them last year. You know what I'm saying? They're a Big Ten school, and Big Ten, there's a stigma around that. And they lost to Virginia Tech. Actually, before the season started, they lost Braxton Miller, their two-time reigning Big Ten player of the year. They lost him. Then they lose to Virginia Tech with JT Barrett, and then it looks like the sky's falling. And then they rattled off like 13 wins in a row and win the national championship. And they did so in the process with two quarterbacks, JT Barrett, who took the Buckeyes, and I'm gonna slip up and say us from time to time when talking about Ohio State. I'm sorry, y'all, forgive me. But Barrett took the Bucks all the way to the Big Ten Championship game, got hurt against Michigan, of course. Then enter Cardale Jones, the pride of Cleveland, Ohio, 12-gauge, comes through, lights up Wisconsin, and then continues to do his thing against Alabama and Oregon. And leads the Bucks to another national championship. And so they are the first ever unanimous preseason number one seed. Just like the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast is the first ever unanimous preseason podcast of the year. So we got something in common there. But the Buckeyes, man, Urban Meyer did a phenomenal coaching job in his 3 years there. He's lost three ball games. And again, to underscore how good of a coach Urban Meyer is, and I've said this before, Urban Meyer has won two national championships with Florida. He's now won a third national championship with Ohio State, and he has two other undefeated seasons as a head coach of Division I football. So that's how off the chain this dude is as a coach. And now he's got the problem of a lifetime. JT Barrett, Cardale Jones. Kenny, what should Ohio State do? Who should they start?
At the beginning of the offseason, I was of the belief that it should and would be Cardale Jones that would be the starting quarterback going into the upcoming season, just because of the fact that he has such a dynamic arm, the fact that he did so well under tremendous pressure in those three title games that he played for us this season, this past season. And in addition to that, just the fact that he brings variety to the offense. I felt that JT Barrett, although he is a great player, he plays a more similar style to Braxton Miller. And, you know, having two people on the field with the exact same skill set seemed like it was a little unnecessary, and you would have more variety in the offense if you had the big arm of a big man like Cardale and a power, the running power to, you know, get those extra first downs and those QB sneaks and things like that. So all that being said, I've listened around in the off season. I've heard a lot about the dedication and hard work that JT Barrett in particular has been putting in as improving as a player and as a leader. I think the team is rallied behind him in a lot of ways. They love Cardale. They're like, the whole team is a family, and that's what every reporter has reported basically since Urban Meyer has gotten there. But all that being said, I think that Urban Meyer loves a quarterback who plays the way that that Braxton Miller plays. And again, I think that his skill set is a lot more like JT Barrett. Therefore, he will feel more comfortable with JT as the starter.
So is that who you would also start?
You know what? Honestly, I still think that I would probably start Cardale. I think that, you know, it's not so much that that one is better than the other. I think it's just that they have different skill sets. I like the fact that, Cardale's a big guy, and he can power those extra yards if necessary. He can do things, and he can throw over tops of defenders because he's a big guy with a big arm. But I think that overall we're going to go with JT Barrett. And, you know, I think that JT Barrett is, he's proven to be a very focused young man and a very humble young man. So either way, I think we're winners either way. But, I think that overall when we look at who starts the game, I think both will see the field, however. But when we look at who actually is going to be starting the game for us against Virginia Tech, it will be JT Barrett.
And I think you're right about that. That's a great point about both of them seeing the field. And I hope, my hope is that Urban Meyer does not go overboard with the two quarterback thing. And he actually rode that all the way to a national championship one year with Florida when he had Chris Leak and Tim Tebow, and it worked for them. Jim Tressel tried it with Troy Smith and Justin Zwick some years ago, and it didn't go well until he gave the job to Troy Smith. So I'm of the belief that typically if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. And I'm not really a fan of the idea of him switching out both guys here and there, this play, this situation, whatever. But, and as a Cleveland native, I'm just, again, just full disclosure, as a Cleveland native, I kind of want to see Cardale Jones start. He's from the same neighborhood our mama's from, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I like that guy for that reason alone, but I will point this out, and I heard somebody say this on TV the other day, and I don't recall who it was, but and they made a good point. They basically said that with all these suspensions that Ohio State has, these self-imposed one-game suspensions on Jalen Marshall, Joey Bosa, and a couple of other receivers whose names escape me at the moment, but they're going to be missing some offensive weaponry, Ohio State is, going into Blacksburg for this game. And it makes more sense to have JT Barrett on the field for that reason. Because he's more versatile as a runner than Cardale is. And Cardale can run the rock, don't get me wrong. But JT is more of an accomplished, polished runner from the quarterback position. And for that reason, he's going to give something else for Virginia Tech to think about. Something more to key in on rather than if it was Cardale. Cardale's more of a traditional pocket passer than JT is probably. So when you consider that, it kind of makes more sense that they would go to the running threat. Plus, if you think that they're going to be missing some receivers, that Virginia Tech might then try to key in on Ezekiel Elliott more so, the tailback. Well, if that's the case, then it really makes more sense to have JT out there because they can run a little read option. They can kind of play that against him, as Virginia Tech might be overly aggressively trying to pursue Zeke, and you know, they can get burned on the option by JT if he decides to keep it. So, you know, I think that there's a few different options there, man, and I don't know that there is a wrong answer. It's really a great problem to have.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think that you know, the term embarrassment of riches has floated around Columbus, Ohio for the past, you know, 6 months or so, and I think it's a very apt term, you know, and, you know, of all the times to have a problem of having too many quarterbacks, you know, this would be it, you know, and I feel confident in either one of them, to be 100% honest with you. I think that both of them have proven themselves under pressure. I think that both of them have a great you know, vision of the field, and I think that, you know, each in their own way knows how to get us to where we need to get to win the game.
The only thing I'm concerned about with Cardale, and I think I've told this to you before, and it's not that Ohio State doesn't have other good receivers, because little Keyshawn's little nephew is dope. He can ball. Thomas, I believe his name is. And then, yeah, and thank you. And Jalen Marshall, obviously, is very talented in space with the football. He's more of an H-back, but he, you know, he catches the ball quite a bit. Those guys are talented, but they lost the big playability with Devin Smith. He was drafted by the New York Jets. So Cardale loading up that 12 gauge, you know what I'm saying, and letting that big ball fly. I don't know if that's going to be in the offense from day one. That kind of concerns me because Devin Smith was making a lot of plays for Cardale last year down the stretch in those final three games. Ohio State's schedule is nothing to write home about. I mean, aside from this game against Virginia Tech and Frank Beamer, as we saw last year in Columbus, Frank Beamer always has his boys prepared. But aside from that, there's not a whole lot going on schedule-wise for Ohio State, and they play, you know, their standard Big Ten opponents. I don't know if they play Wisconsin this year, but I do know that they play Michigan State the second-to-last game of the season before they play Michigan. And then you have obviously the Harbaugh Urban Meyer matchup, which could be insane because assuming Harbaugh's head doesn't explode before the game. Real quick, talk to me about Michigan, and I mean, do you think they're going to be a factor with Harbaugh in the fold now? And does anybody have a case against Ohio State for them having a what's perceived to be anyway a softer schedule?
Right.
Do you think that perception is fair?
Well, I would say as far as. Well, first let me say that as far as Michigan and Ohio State is concerned, I think that, you know, if any of you read my article on Hip Hop Sports Report about Jim Harbaugh from last month, it was just kind of updating everybody on the real shot of new blood that he's bringing into Ann Arbor. And what he's really doing is some of it is really calculated. Some of it's brilliant. Some of it's just plain kooky. But, you know, he's trying everything. He's throwing it all at the wall, and he's seeing what sticks. And, you know what, you got to respect that because, you know, somebody who's willing to just literally just put themselves out there and do any and everything to appease, the fan base and, the actual staff themselves by just having quality players coming in. And he's doing everything that's within his legal power to do that. And, you know, somebody who's willing to do that and go the extra mile, you know, a person that has that kind of intensity, it's great for football, it's great for Big Ten, it's great for Michigan in particular. You know, I don't know if this year is going to be enough. You know, they have a lot of questions on offense. Their offense was extremely unproductive. I don't believe their running game in particular was horrid last season. So with all that being said, they have not named the starting quarterback yet. They just have they did have a transfer, I believe, from Iowa. You know, thing is that they just have a lot up in the air, and it, you know, and they have a tough schedule. They start off against Utah. You know, they do have to still play against Michigan State and Ohio State this season. They have some other games on the schedule that are particularly noteworthy as well, if I don't recall. But you know, so that being said, I don't think that this is necessarily their year. I do think that Michigan, if they can get to the point where they, if they were to have a season similar to this previous season, but if they got one of those wins over Ohio State, I think that closing out that way would be big enough for them to feel that they still had a successful season moving forward. You know, a lot of these were, you know, these were not Harbaugh's recruits for the most part. These were people who came on the watch prior to him, Brady Hoke. So, you know, he's just working with what he has and maximizing what he has right now. And, you know, and him and his staff are working hard right now. As far as Ohio State's concerned and the perception of their weaker schedule, you know, the thing about that has always kind of vexed me is just that, you know, I understand that, you know, people may, you know, one schedule may be perceived to be softer than other schedules, and that's fine. But the thing is that part of, you know, I'm of the belief that steel sharpens steel, you know, and part of the reason that a team is usually, you know, improves and has the opportunity to get better is by playing tough teams and playing teams of a high caliber. So, you know, if you do have teams out here who have been playing these other great teams and they've been, you know, doing what they need to do throughout the season to get to that point, you know, overcoming, you know, deficits, you know, playing from behind, playing in hostile environments, things of that nature, you know, when you look at them and you look at a team like Ohio State who maybe hasn't had that same experience, then that's got to count for something too. You know, if you look at it, you know, I guess from the opposite side of the, you know, the situation here.
Now, there's three quarterbacks I wanted to ask you about, and they're either new faces or in new places or they're new all the way together. You have Everett Golson, the quarterback who was the signal caller for Notre Dame when they were in the national championship game against Alabama a few years ago. He transferred down to Florida State, and he was named a starter for the Seminoles. So you have him, Everett Golson, Malik Zaire, who's now the quarterback at Notre Dame. Notre Dame ranked 11th, by the way, in both the USA Today Coaches Poll and the AP Top 25. Florida State, for the record, is 10th in the AP and 8th in the Coaches Poll. And then Vernon Adams, the transfer who came from Eastern Washington, had to take a test at like the 11th hour on some Saved by the Bell type stuff, passed the test, and now all of a sudden he's starting for Oregon. You know what I mean? And he put up big numbers at Eastern Washington. Now he's going to go fill the very large shoes of Marcus Mariota. Who are you expecting the most out of this year between those three? Or is there somebody else that you're really expecting big things from?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I haven't really you know, thought about it in that context. I think that between those three, I think that, you know, the expectations are going to be highest for, I would say, Everett Golson, because of the fact that, you know, he's coming into Florida State. Florida State, you know, still hot off of their national title from 2 years ago. And, you know, they still have, you know, high hopes and high expectations as always. So, you know, coming into a situation like that from, you know, an institution like a Notre Dame, you know, and coming from there and already being supposed to be a quarterback of high caliber, high expectations come with that. So I think that with Malik Zaire, he's probably my favorite of the three, but, you know, he's still very unproven and he's still very young. So, you know, at this point, we're just going to have to wait and see exactly how things pan out for Notre Dame this year. I think that overall, they will have a good season. They do have a pretty hostile schedule. So, you know, that being said, you know, I think that it might be a great learning experience for them. But I don't know if they would make it to the playoff as it stands today.
I think the kid Adams is gonna ball out at Oregon because of the system there. And you know, the system, Chip Kelly's system, I guess we're giving Chip Kelly the credit for installing it there. And then Mark Helfrich kind of took it over and is now the steward of that system. And we saw what Mariota did in that system. And now we're going to see Vernon Adams, who again put up crazy numbers at, I think it was Eastern Washington is where he was. And he's going to move right in, and I think he's going to put up huge numbers and be a Heisman candidate. And speaking of Heisman candidates, you know, so those guys are going to be in a discussion. I think Ezekiel Elliott is certainly going to be in a discussion. We then have Cody Kessler from USC, the quarterback. Nick Chubb, the running back from Georgia, who's going to be filling in for my man Todd Gurley, who is now in the NFL. Connor Cook. Is it Connor Cook or Connor Quinn? I forget his name. It's Connor Cook, isn't it? From Michigan State.
Yeah.
Thank you. Connor Cook from Michigan State. Hackenberg from Penn State. one of these guys are probably going to be quarterbacking your Cleveland Browns next year, so I know you're going to be paying attention. But, you know, you have Boykin from TCU, Seth Russell from Baylor. Who is your Heisman favorite? Who do you think has the inside track on getting that stiff arm award coming in December?
As it stands today, as much as I would love to say Ezekiel Elliott, I'm not thoroughly convinced that he will actually walk away with the Heisman Trophy. I would love to see him win it. You know, as it's been well documented, there's like a I believe a 20-year span where Ohio State running back seems to win the Heisman Trophy every 20 years. So I would love to see that tradition continue on here. My concern is just that, to be honest, when you have a team that is loaded at all positions, as Ohio State is right now, you know, the ball's got to go a lot of different ways. And this isn't a team that's just, you know, one-dimensional where, you know, we need him to burden the load all of the time for us to win or be effective. You know, when you have weapons like a Braxton Miller on the field at all times, and when you have, you know, these quarterbacks that are versatile and can run and can throw, and we have, you know, these other receivers and you know, we and Curtis Samuel even, you know, when we have these type of players on the field, it's hard to get the ball in everybody's hands. So that being said, you know, I just don't know if he's going to get enough touches, honestly, to be in serious contention for the running at the end there. Or, you know, necessarily he'll be in serious contention, but I just don't know if he'll walk away with it. So as it stands today, if I was going to say who I would project to win the Heisman, again, that's such a hard thing to do at this point of the year, but I would probably go with Leonard Fournette from LSU. I think that he's got a lot to prove this year. You know, they're going to be kind of throwing him the keys this year, you know, and it's going to be really exciting just to see what him and Brandon Harris do, you know, as two sophomores kind of leading the charge there. And I think that nationwide the expectations for LSU are kind of on the low end. So that being said, you know, I think they're flying under a lot of people's radar, and I think that they could easily be a team that sneaks up on, you know, on the SEC and ultimately makes it into the playoff potentially.
I you know what, I like that pick, and I left him off that list. But Leonard Fournette, he was like all everything when he came out of high school. He was like, you know how there's like 4 and 5 star recruits. He was like a 10-star recruit coming out of high school. Like everybody knew this dude was the everybody knew he was the best running back in the country. You know what I'm saying? And he had a very very solid freshman year. And like you said, he's the man now. You know what I mean? And I think that it's going to be either between him and Ezekiel Elliott. That's what I do believe. I don't think that any of these quarterbacks. And I think Boykin's going to be right there too. I should say that as well. And to your point about Ezekiel Elliott, you're right when you say that Ohio State is going to have to spread the wealth, and that's correct. I'm going to read off Ezekiel Elliott's stats one more time from the last three games of last year. This is against Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship game. 20 carries, 220 yards, and 2 touchdowns. That's over 10 yards a carry. That's insane. Sugar Bowl against Alabama, who everybody says is, you know, oh, it's Alabama. Like, nobody can beat Alabama, right? Well, Ezekiel Elliott carried the rock 20 times for 230 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he was actually better against Bama than he was against Wisconsin. And then in the national championship game, there was Oregon was the opponent. He carried the rock 36 times for 246 yards and 4 touchdowns. One of the single best national championship performances of all time. That was in 3 games. He basically rushed for like almost 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, that's insane. So I think that he's really going to, I think the ball is in his court. It's his to lose. Basically, my counter to your point about spreading the wealth is that the voters love the undefeated team. And given the lack of super duper strength in the Big Ten, assuming Ohio State can make it through undefeated, I think Ezekiel Elliott is going to be sitting there at the New York Athletic Club in December. You know what I mean? And I think it's going to be his award to lose, basically. Urban Meyer is going to give him more than enough opportunities to win that award. Now, I don't know that he's going to be gunning for it, per se. Urban is on Zeke's behalf, but I think the opportunity is going to be there. And I think it's going to be between those two guys. I don't think any of these other quarterbacks have enough to make it there, except for Boykin, because I think that TCU probably has the next best chance at going undefeated. And looking at the top 25 really quick, we only got a few minutes left, but I wanted to go over a couple more things. First of all, the top 10, I'll read off the AP top 10 real quick. So Ohio State 1, TCU 2, Bama 3, Baylor 4, Michigan State 5, Auburn 6, Oregon 7, USC 8, and the drunk the drunk ass head coach, number 9, Georgia, and number 10, Florida State. And in the coaches poll, it goes Ohio State, TCU, Bama, Baylor, Oregon, Michigan State, Auburn, Florida State, then Georgia, then USC. And then looking at it from a bigger conference perspective, we have 8 SEC teams in the top 25 right now, 6 from the Pac-12, then 3 from the Big Ten, Big 12, and ACC, 1 from the Mountain West, Boise State, and then 1 independent, Notre Dame. So, and now I've been banging on the SEC for years, you know what I'm saying? Not that they're not great, but I just think they're overrated, and they've been overrated for some time. Do you have any thoughts on the shakedown of the different by conference, the amount of teams that are represented? I mean, did the voters in this case anyway get it right to start the season?
You know what? I think that all in all, I would say so. You know, I think that a lot of this is purely speculative, and you know, when you know they go in from one season to the next, they're just basing this off of where the team left off last season, who they are bringing in, who is left to move on in life, whether it's the NFL or just graduating college or whatever. But you know, all this is purely speculative. So there's going to be some rumbling. It's going to be shaken up. Teams are going to shoot to the top. Teams are going to fall off and drop. It happens every year. It's supposed to happen. But as far as the representation and the spreading out of the teams across the board here in relation to the top 10, I think it is probably fairly a fair representation of where we stand currently with our teams here in college football. I think that the SEC has done some really great things here, and again, you got to tip your cap to them. And I can't take anything away from them in that context. But at the same time, you still have to be mindful that there are other teams that are still doing their thing in other conferences that are still on their upswing as well.
Well, there's a few other notables that didn't make the field of 25. So just for those of you who may be wondering, to my surprise, and I actually did a double take, like looking at the top 25, like, are we sure that they're not on here somewhere? Mississippi State is not in the top 25 right now. Wow. Then, Texas is not there. Michigan, Penn State, Virginia Tech, Texas A&M, Oklahoma State, Nebraska, Utah, Kansas State, Minnesota, Louisville. Those are a few teams that are like the next tier down. They're on the outside looking in. Is there any team that's maybe not in the top 10, or is there any one team that you think has a good shot at jumping up and making some noise?
Let's see. As far as teams that I could expect, that I could see making some noise this season potentially, I would say Texas Longhorns. I know that Charlie Strong is in his second season there, and it's going to be hostile because of the fact that as always, the expectations are high in Longhorn country. I know that he's been chomping at the bit and kind of getting rid of the old regime, getting rid of some of the, not so much getting rid of the old, but he's infusing his own talent and his own players, his own staff, and his own mantras and ideals into these players, and it's taken some time for everything to gel. But I think that he believes that it's coming together, and I think that I could easily see them, making some noise here, especially later on in the season, depending on how things go. Also, you can never even count out a team like Oklahoma. They usually perform their best in the years that they have low expectations for them as well. So that being said, I could see them always being a team that that pops up and makes some noise. The Big 12 is always a highly competitive conference, so I always look to them as being a hotbed for any kind of team that's on the rise.
I think you got to pay attention to the Pac-12, man. I think the Pac-12 has been nipping at the SEC's heels for a couple of years now, and nobody's really been talking about it. And as far as the best conference in America, so I think that could be happening, especially if USC bounces back and has a strong year despite their drunk ass head coach. And then of course our cousin Mo, she's a big Oklahoma Sooner fan, and that's her alma mater. So Mo, I know she's loving what you had to say about the Sooners, not so much about the Longhorns, but we love you anyways, Mo. Final thoughts, man. We're about to get out of here real quick. Do you have a Final Four? And if so, who's in your Final Four?
Okay, real quick, my Final Four. As it stands today, I would go with number one, Ohio State. You know, I think, you know, what else can you say about them? There's really nothing that you can say about them as it stands today that is not exceptional. I mean, obviously that can change a lot over the course of the season here, and a lot of football needs to be played here, but, you know, I still have them as being number one. I see them kind of running wire to wire here. Number two, I have Michigan State. You know, I think that it's going to be a big year, I'm predicting, for the Big Ten. You know, what they have a game here early on. Let me check. I believe that was against September 12th. They have a game against Oregon here, who's number seven currently. You know, I think that as being the number five team currently themselves, I think that they have that can really springboard them into the conversation early. And if they can, you know, maintain and do what they need to do across the board this season, I think that they could still make it into the conversation there at the end. Number three, I have Baylor. I think I have them coming out of the Big 12. I think it's going to be another bloodbath between them and TCU. But I think that in the end, I think that our Browse is going to, you know, rally his troops again, pull that one out, getting them in at number three. And number four, to your point about the Pac-12, I have USC sneaking up and getting that last spot there and snatching that one away. I think that Cody Kessler is going to have a phenomenal season. Watch out for Dory Jackson. That kid is nuts. And he's a three-way player, you know, offense, defense, special teams. He does it all. He's just a fire plug out there, and he's another dark horse candidate for me for the Heisman Trophy this year.
I love your Final Four because I don't think that that's a Final Four that you're going to hear anywhere else on the internet. And I think, and to be quite honest, I don't see any chance of that Final Four making it there. And I know we're short on time, but I just, when I hear it, I love to hear it. I love the sound of it. But in practice, what you're saying is that Baylor's going to beat TCU. You're saying that Ohio State, who plays Michigan State during the season, not counting the Big Ten championship game. So one of them is going to, they're going to play each other. One of them is going to have a loss there. Michigan State also got smoked by Oregon last year out in Oregon. So I'm assuming this game is in Michigan, is in East Lansing, but still, they're going to have to beat Oregon. Then they're going to have the matchup between them and Ohio State. One of those guys is going to lose, and then they might meet again in the Big Ten championship game, and then that's going to be a second loss for one of them. I don't see them overcoming that, and you don't have an SEC team in your Final Four, and you know the committee's going to put an SEC team in there. So I don't see any way that that happens, but I hope that it does because that would be awesome. Well, thank you for joining us, Kenneth. We're out of time, man. Any final thoughts really, really quick?
I mean, just honestly, as you know, I think it's going to be an exciting year. I think it's going to be some really good football played. You know, I'm just waiting to see what happens and how it all unfolds. You know, I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, the beauty of college football in particular is that, you know, a team like Ohio State that started out the year, I believe we started out last year number five and dropped down, I believe, to like number 17 and then bounced back up to win it all. You know, that, you know, those type of stories happen, you know, and, you know, the improbable does happen from time to time. And that's why we keep watching. So I'm excited.
Preseason podcast of the year. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gents. Go get Natural Life available on the internet right now. You can order it for the Kindle and a paperback copy as well through Amazon.com or through ObeliskMediaGroup.com. Kenneth, thank you for joining us. Check us out on Twitter, of course, at HHS Report. Yo, man, please follow us, retweet us, whatever. Same thing with Facebook, man. Go ahead and like the Facebook page. And, of course, we're always on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, so please check us out there. Subscribe and comment and rate the podcast, y'all. Please hit us with your feedback, good, bad, ugly. Where I'm a big boy. I can take it. You know what I'm saying? It's all good. And be sure to check out the rest of our NFL preview, which is coming soon and should be up before the start of the season. So thank you all for listening, y'all. We out of here. Peace.
I'm expressing with my full capabilities, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it get funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat, and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what? I won't hesitate to diss one of
two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well I'm dropping English. Even if Yella makes it a cappella, I still express yo, I don't smoke weed or sex. Cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel.
Spread yourself.
For the pop chart, so where should a brother like you start expressing yourself, my boy, and show you how your track,
what up,
drop English right about now. Getting back to the PG, that's program, and it's easy. Dre is back, new jacks are made hollow, expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend, the records I spin again and again and again. Yo, you're on the other end, watch a brother blend, dope rhymes but no help. There's no fessing or guessing while I'm expressing myself. It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go, they know. Others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Though some musicians, cause at home, they're scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show, they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to
spread yourself.
Yo, Dre is the name for it. I make something dope on a record, that's what he came for. Kicking reality, yo, but staying itself. But it's important that you keep it in mind too. From the heart, cause if you wanna start to move up the chart, then expression is a big part of it. You ain't efficient when you flow, you ain't swift, moving like a tortoise, full of rigor mortis. There's a little bit more to show. I got rhymes in my mind, embedded like an embryo or a lesson. All of them expression, and if you start fessing, I got a Smith & Wesson for you. I might ignore your record because it has no bottom. I get loose in the summer, winter, spring, and autumn. It's Dre on the mic, getting physical, doing a job. And WA is the lynch mob. It's a macabre, but you know you need this. And the knowledge is going just like a fetus or a tumor. But here's the rumor, Dre's in the neighborhood, and he's up to no good. When I start expressing myself, yell and slam it. Cause if I stay funky like this, I'm doing damage. Or I'ma be too hype and need a straight jacket. I got knowledge, another sucker's lacking. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like. It's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if I strike, it ain't for your good health. But I won't strike if you just
spread yourself.